If you will, get your Bibles and turn to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel. Chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14. And we got into this a little bit the other night, but we're going to brush over it just a little bit to catch you up. Now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan the son of Saul said to the young man that bare his armor, "Come and let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side." But he told not his father. And Saul tarried in the uttermost parts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people that were with him were about 600 men. And Ahi, the son of Ibitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, and the Lord's priest Shiloh, wearing the ephod. And the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison was a sharp rock, the one on one side, and a sharp rock on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other was Shinah. The forefront of one was situate northward over against Michmash, and the other southward over against Gibeah. And Jonathan said to the young man, his armor bearer, "Come and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised, and it may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint of the Lord to save by many or few." And his armor bearer said unto him, "Do all that is in thine heart, turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thine heart." And I think we left off somewhere in there showing that God is able to save, whether by a bunch or by a few. We see here that Jonathan's over here with his armor bearer, pretty well all by himself, these two men. And Saul and 600 men are over here under a pomegranate tree. And they're all in dire straits. But Jonathan's sitting here saying, you know, the Lord doesn't need a big army. Jonathan still has a little bit of faith in the Lord. He's still trusting God. He's not sitting there like Saul trying to do it with his own arm, with his own strength, with his own power. He's saying the Lord can whip this bunch, whether they be two of us or thousands of us. Whether there be. And his armor bearer undoubtedly believed the same thing he did. And his armor bearer said to him, "Whatever you desire to do, I'll go with you. Regardless of how the outcome is, I'm with you. I'm not going to turn from you. I'm not going to run from you. Whatever we get into, I'm going to stay right here beside you." So let's see where we go with this, because that's where we left off last week. That's what was happening when we closed the doors. And then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will pass over unto these men and will discover ourselves unto them." Now that's normally not how you fight a fight, especially if you want to get out of it in good shape. Now there's a big sharp rock over here, and there's a big sharp rock over here, and the garrison is right up yonder. And he says, "We're going to walk out here in a way that we're going to crawl out from behind cover, and we're going to let them see us standing right out here in the open." He says, "We're going to let them just look at us." Because you know that the other people have done went and hid in the rocks and under the briar bushes and everything. So the garrison up there at the top of the hill is saying, "Look, some of them Hebrews is crawling out of the woodwork." And we're going to get to that in just a minute. They're sneaking out. They're trying to, by stealth, get away or whatever. And they look down there and see Jonathan. "We're going to discover ourselves. On purpose, we're going to let them see us. We're going to get some direction from God because of what they're going to say. If they say this, then God has given to us. If they say that..." But when he says they say that, he never does say what they're going to do. So it sort of left me in a blank spot there. So if y'all look at that and y'all say, well, when he says if they say that, then they just stand there. I don't know. But we'll see. Undoubtedly, he's figuring they'll come on down. They'll whoop them anyway. Either way, Jonathan figures God's going to whoop them regardless if they come down or they go up. And then he says, "If they say unto us thus, tarry until we come unto you. Then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up into them." In other words, if they say, "Y'all just stay right there, we're coming after you. We're coming to get you." He's assuming that by the time they get there, God's going to have it finished. He's going to whip them on the way down. Because he says, we'll just stand still and wait on them. Because that's what God says. If y'all just hang in down there, we're coming down to you. We're going to just start this fight over. He says, if you'll just, we'll stay there and we'll wait upon them. But if they say thus, come up unto us, we will go up. Wait a minute. There's at least 20, 30 men up in that garrison probably. And they're all got their armament. They've all got everything they need to fight with. They're in a protected hole that they can defend. And we've got two men going to come up to them. He says, but if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand, and this shall be a sign unto us. If they say, come on, if they say, come on, and the things that I've been studying and reading about it says, if they say, come on, it most likely means they're scared to death. Because they're saying, we're not going to come out to you. You may have people hidden in the rocks. You may have people right there. We come out there in the open, you might could whoop us. But if you come up here to us, we're protected, we're in our garrison, we're in our stronghold, we got this thing done. In fact, we're too scared to come out to you. You're going to have to come up to us. So he says here, if they say come up, then we're going to go up because that'll be a sign unto us. And both of them discovered themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they have hid themselves. And look at that. All them chickens are finally coming out. All them cowards have been hiding in the bushes. They've been hiding under the rocks. They've been hiding in the caves. They've been hiding under the briars. They're starting to sneak out now like they're going to slip away. The people up at the garrison look down and say, behold, there they are. Them Hebrews have finally started coming out of the works. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and said unto his armor bearer, and said, come up to us. Hey, you Hebrew guys, you come on up here. We'll show you a thing or two. We'll teach you a lesson like you ain't never known. He says, come up to us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hands of Israel. He didn't say into the hands of me, or in the hands of you, but into the hands of Israel. God's chosen people into the hands of Israel. He didn't take credit for being the fighter, but just part of Israel. And he says, and let's go up there now. Follow me. God has delivered them. And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and on his feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer. So it says here they climbed up. Now I'm thinking they didn't just walk up that middle valley in the open where these guys could just watch them every step of the way till they got there so they could be ready to shoot arrows at them or whatever. I'm thinking they climbed up that strong, sharp rock. I'm thinking they climbed up that sharp place where it was slick and all that, where they would have never figured they would have come. And maybe they even lost sight of them for a little while. And they're climbing up there, they're sneaking up there, they're on their hands and their knees, they're crawling between the rocks trying to hang on the best way they know how till they could get up to the garrison and come in behind them or around them, but not straight through the door, because that would not be the way to win a battle with 20 guys. So I think it says, and he climbed up upon his hands and knees. In other words, he didn't just stand up straight up and down and walk up the middle of the road. He climbed up that sharp rock, which would have been a feat all by itself, but he climbed up there. And it says, and John, his armor bearer climbed up there with him. And then it says, and they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer after him. In other words, Jonathan started whipping them. And as he would slash one or push one down or whatever, his armor bearer would come behind him. And that's what armor bearers did. And as he would knock a man down or wound a man, the armor bearer would finish that man off with a death thrust or whatever it would take. So therefore, Jonathan didn't have to turn his eyes off of what was ahead of him and what was beside of him to turn around and make sure he killed this guy. But his armor bearer would, behind him, would finish the job. So therefore, he never had to turn his back to his enemy to finish anybody. He was always in the pursuit mode. So when he was fighting, whatever was ahead of him, he was killing it. He was knocking it down. He was shoving it down. The armor bearer would death blow behind him, death blow over here. And so therefore, Jonathan, as he would slew them or push them down, the armor bearer would finish them up. And it says, and that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made were about 20 men within the space of a half acre of land, which is the yoke of oxen can plow. And so it says here, there's a spot about the size of this room, really, that a man would plow with an ox all day long, that he could get plowed, broke up, and all done like that. He says, within the space of this room, or a little bit bigger, he whipped 20 men, killed them graveyard dead on the spot. God gave him the victory there. It says, in the space of a spot. So in other words, he didn't have to go far off to get after these guys. They were right here. So when that little garrison, I don't know how big the garrison actually was, but they had actually trapped themselves into the garrison. He had them hemmed up, as you say. Instead of the Indians surrounding the cowboys, he had them surrounded by themselves. And we're going to find some other fancy things here in just a few minutes. It's going to be really nifty. And he says, and there was a trembling in the host, in the field, and among all the people. And the garrison and the spoilers, they were trembling, and the earth quaked. That means the earthquake. There was an earthquake, a little shaking of the ground there. I wonder who did that. Yeah, God got involved in this thing. And it was a very great trembling. In other words, even the men was having trouble standing on their feet because even the ground was shaking and a rocking. He says there was a great fear, a great trembling in the host. And we're talking about the host of the Philistines. We're talking about the army of the Philistines. All of a sudden, those people who had been out spoiling, remember those three groups of spoilers that were out robbing, stealing, pillaging, all the things they were doing? Those three groups of spoilers, all of a sudden they're sitting here, wait a minute. This guy is whooping us. And he's angry. And he's mad. And we've been taking all their stuff. And we've been killing all their sheep. And we've been just doing all this damage. And now he's coming towards us. And he ain't got mercy on his mind. He's got killing on his mind. We have done ravaged his whole place, and the spoilers were even trembling. It says, and he moved on, and the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another. It says, over here in Gibeah, where Saul was, up on a hill, and they might even have had a tower built there so they could see farther, because that's the way they used to do it back then, so they could see as far as they could see. And they sit out here and they say, I could see something happening over there. And it looks like there are less people there every time we look. So every time they'd go up, there'd be a few less Philistines. There'd be a few less hanging around till all of a sudden it didn't look quite as bad as it did before. They were going to go up against 30,000 chariots. They were going to go up against a bunch of horsemen. And now, he says, there's not as many as they were. In fact, they were doing the same thing the Israelites did just a while ago. Sneaking out and getting away and trying to get away. He says, and the multitude melted away. And they went on beating down who? One another. One another. You reckon why there's not as many as there was? Because every man looked at his other guy that was beside him and saying, that's a Hebrew, he's my enemy. Somehow or other they thought, that guy was my enemy, that guy's my enemy. And they were fighting with each other. No wonder every time they looked out, they said, well, there's not quite as many as there was. They're killing each other. Now, how could that take place? They're just killing each other. There was a pile of them on that hill a while ago, and now there's not quite as many. They're melting away, you betcha. Then it says here, then said Saul unto the people that were with him, number now and see who is gone from us. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not here. So all this great slaughter's going on, all this battle's going on, these people are killing each other, and there's only two of them that's missing, Jonathan and his armor bearer. So Jonathan started something, and the Lord's finishing it. The Lord's wearing them out over there. They're killing each other because everybody sees everybody as their own enemy. And Jonathan and his armor bearer were the only two that were not there. And Saul said unto Ahi, bring hither the ark of God. For the ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel. In other words, it wasn't in a specific place, locked down behind a tent. It was in a man's house. And it came to pass, while Saul talked unto the priest, that the noise that was of the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. In other words, he was fixing to pray. He was fixing to ask counsel of God. He was fixing to do what he really should have done. But the battle just sounded so exciting and so close and all that. He said, we don't have time for praying. Priest, I know you brought the ephod. I know you brought the ark of the Lord. But move your hand back out of the way. We got to go fight this fight. We're right on the verge of this thing. We've got to whip these guys now. They're falling down. So instead of saying prayers, instead of worshiping God, instead of taking time to give God the credit, he says, we ain't got time for that. He says, withdraw thy hand, priest. Get back. I got to fight the fight. That would have been the time I'd want God all over me. That would have been the time I said, wait a minute, we got time for prayer here. We got time for a little worship service here. We got time to get ready. Instead, he says, priest, withdraw thy hand. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, that they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a very great discomfiture. In other words, they got all gathered up, all 600 that was with him, run over to this fight. They surround these people, and they're looking at this thing, and they're killing each other. Man, we all decked out, ready to fight, but we ain't got to fight because they're killing each other. They're beating each other down. They're killing each other. He says, they got there, and the people were with him and assembled themselves, and they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword. We know the Israelites didn't have no swords, right? So if the Israelites didn't have swords, who had the swords? The Philistines. Every man's sword was against his fellow, and it was a very great discomfiture. In other words, they was killing each other left and right. They were mowing them down. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines, there was a few traitors there for a while, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines. You remember the story about David when he went to help the Philistines, and then they woke up and said, we can't have David here. He just liable to turn against us in the middle of this fight. And they sent David back, and he went back to where he came from. But it's the same thing here. Some of these Israelites had joined up with the Philistines. Naturally, people want to be on the winning team, right? Looked to me like the Philistines had the winning team. They had the biggest army, the biggest armament, everything to do. So they joined up with them. He says, and the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were Saul and Jonathan. So in other words, they might have been traitors at first, but when they seen how the Lord was whooping them other folks, let's jump in here and help them out. Let's jump in here and help our brothers. Let's jump in here and help our countrymen. Let's jump in here and change sides. And if you'll notice, that's the same way it is in that country now. In all them Arab countries, on one day they're on one team, and on the next day they're on the other team. That's history right there. These Israelites did the very same thing the Arabs do. They were helping out the Philistines, but when they seen the Philistines was getting whipped, it's time to get our flag back out. Oh, we're one of y'all. We're helping y'all. We're with you. And so they joined back up with their brethren. Likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in the mounts of Ephraim, they went and heard that the Philistines fled. Even they also followed hard after them in battle. In other words, these people were coming out of the rocks and out of the briars and out of the hills and out of the caves. All of a sudden, this big old Philistine army who thought they were so fabulously big is being surrounded by people just coming out of everywhere to fight them and to chase them and to run them out. Man, they're just all over these people. So the Lord saved Israel that day. Wait a minute. Ain't the Israelites coming out of the woodwork? Ain't the Jonathan and his armor bearer the one who started this thing? Yeah. But it says here, and I'll just say it again. and the Lord saved Israel that day. Who put it in the minds of these people to start killing themselves? Who put it in the mind of these people to hate one another? Who could change the heart of a person? And we know that we have some fellow Christians out there, or think they're supposed Christians out there, that say, God would not do such as that. God does not mess with your heart. God does not cause you to do anything. Well, I can tell you in the Old Testament, God caused people to kill each other all the time. There's a many a place where people turned against each other, whether it's because they didn't trust them or they were different denominations or whatever. But all through the Old Testament, God uses people's anger against each other to cause fights between each other to get the victory. And it says, and the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Bethaven. In other words, they chasing these people clean across the country. They're right behind them. They're hot on their trail. They're running them off. And it says, the men of Israel were distressed that day, and Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may avenge mine enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. Now, you're fighting, and you're using all your energy. You're chasing people about 12 or 14 miles down the road. And surely those people were dropping bags of food, sacks of groceries, sandwiches here and there, some rolls of bread here and there, a little sausage here and there. But Saul had said, cursed is any man that eats food this day. Now, he has done hindered his army. He's done put a hamper on it. Because when you're fighting and doing all that, if you have an opportunity to take a little break and get you a little bite to eat, get a little strength back in you so you can fight more, they could have really done some whooping had they been eating every chance they got. But instead, they're getting hungrier and hungrier and hungrier because they've under a curse. They've been told by Saul, cursed is any man that eateth anything today. Or taste, even tasteth. And he puts the word, and tasteth. It says, till my individual, so none of the people tasted any food. And all they of the land came into the woods, and there was honey upon the ground. Now, these bees, it's amazing these bees didn't get after nobody, but these bees are honeybees undoubtedly, and they might have been honey in the trees or along the trees. There might have been honey on the ground. They might have had hives on the ground, because some of those over there make hives on the ground. Or some people even think this might even be sugar cane. Because of the sweetness of the sugar and the cane. Some of the commentators say it possibly was sugar cane. But it's kind of hard to dip your rod into a sugar cane and get something. So I'm thinking it's pure tea honey. That's what my Bible says, and I'm going to stick with that. It was honey. Now, there may have been sugar cane in that area at that time. But in the woods, it says, there was honey, and it was all over the ground. I remember a guy killed a lion, and the next time he walked by, it had a honey bee hive in it. And it don't take long to make honey. I mean, them bees can get after it. And he says, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the woods, behold, the honey dropped. Maybe even from the trees. It was dripping out of the trees there in the woods. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. In other words, these people would go hungry this day simply and purely because they obeyed their king. They obeyed their king so fully that it's a ridiculous thing not to eat. It's a ridiculous thing not to get you some strength and some substance back into you to fight. But because Saul had put a curse on them, they obeyed him. And it says here, and they would not eat. They would not taste because of the oath that he had. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Jonathan wasn't there. Jonathan was with his armor bearer off here whooping the camp, doing something brave and ferocious, while the people were back at the pomegranate tree. The people were back there hearing Saul make these curses to bind the people's hands. But Jonathan was out getting ready to fight, doing his thing. And it says, Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people for the oath. And this is going to be an important thing because later on in this story, they're going to draw lots between the two. And Jonathan never says, because I didn't know I should be innocent. I didn't know, so therefore I should be able to go free. Jonathan never put up a defense. He says, I'm guilty. I did taste. I did eat. We'll get there in a minute. Well, maybe not in a minute. Maybe next week. I don't know. Anyways, then it says, Jonathan heard not the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of his rod. Now, I don't think he's packing a sword and a spear and a rod, so I'm thinking when he says he put forth the end of his rod, that's his spear. One end of it has a killing instrument on it. The other end of his rod, naturally, that's a honey beehive or a big beehive. You don't necessarily want to stick your hand in there and get you a gob of it unless you're a good beekeeper. You might get eat up. So he takes his rod and he dips it up in there and he gets him a good chunk of honey. And he feels good. And it lightens up his eyes. And that sugar just goes and doing the thing it's supposed to do. And he gets nourishment and excitement. Honey is one of the quickest things to get to your system. It says here, and he put forth his hand and dipped it in the honeycomb, and he put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Man, when you've been fighting all day, that first little bit of food, that first little bit of nourishment makes you feel better, makes you feel stronger, makes you ready to keep into the battle. He was ready to go. He was enlightened. He could feel good. He was invigorated. Then answered one of the people and said unto his father, and said unto him, thy father, he wasn't there. And there's always a tattletale in every bunch. You know that? There's always somebody that's got to point out the fact that you just broke a law. You just violated your father's rule. You just got cursed. There's always somebody that's got to point out the fact that you're bad. You just messed up. You just whooped a whole pile of them, but yet you just made your father upset. It says here, one of the people said, thy father straightly, in other words, there wasn't no doubt about it, he didn't beat around the bush, he straightly charged the people with an oath. In other words, he made them verbally say back, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. In other words, your dad put a curse on all of us. Your dad has straightly told us if we eat anything, we're going to be cursed. If we eat anything, we're violating something about God. We're doing anything about eating. Before the end of the day, we have wronged the king. We have violated a command of the king. We'll be under the curse. Then said Jonathan, now, he probably shouldn't have said this out loud, but, I mean, he's tired, he's weary, he's just fighting a whole big old battle, so he's probably got a little bit of thought about, I've been doing all this fighting, and he's been back under the pomegranate tree. But he says here, then said Jonathan, my father hath troubled the land. In other words, it wasn't a very wise thing to curse us where we couldn't eat. It wasn't a very wise thing to fix it where we couldn't get strength and be able to fight on and chase the enemies. Now everybody is faint. Everybody is weary. Everybody's running out of gas. And they're running from us. And we're too tired to chase them. Whereas if we'd all dip us a little bit of this honey, we'd just totally wipe those folks out right now. We'd finish this battle up. He says, my father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I tasted a little of this honey. In other words, see the difference in how I was before I got this little mouthful? Just think what it would be like if you had a mouthful. Just think how invigorated you would have been, how ready to fight you would have been, and yet you are all weary and wore out and downtrodden. You have fought as hard as you could fight, and there ain't no more fight left in you. If you'd have just tasted a little of this honey, how much more, if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found. In other words, if you'd have been picking up the sack lunches, as they'd have been dropping their sandwiches, if they'd been dropping their roast beef when they were running down the hill, as they'd been trying to make their load lighter so they could get away, if you'd have just picked up a sandwich or something on the way, how much stronger you would have been if y'all had been eating all the time. Now, I'm not talking about sit down and have a barbecue. I'm talking about grab your bite to eat and keep on fighting. He said, just think how much if you'd have just picked up some of the spoils from your enemy, which you found. For had there not been how much more greater slaughter among the Philistines, if you'd have just ate a little bit here and there, if you'd just strengthened yourself a little bit. Now, he's given these men a lot of strength. He's applying a lot of things to the men's arms and strength. Although we know God was doing the whipping here, a lot of the whipping, these men followed him behind, chasing, and ran out of gas. But had they been eaten alone, they might have not have ran out of gas quite as fast. It says, and we might have slaughtered, we might have had a great slaughter, a big slaughter among the Philistines. And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. They done went a long ways. In fact, I think Beth Haven, which is speaking of, well, it was about 12 miles away. So they started fighting over here, and they have done fought and chased for 12 miles. Just carrying all your stuff for that far as load and make you tired, but they've been fighting. Can you imagine, like, just like chopping down a tree? If you chop down a tree for the time it took you to 12 miles, if you're slinging a sword at somebody and they're slinging a sword back, that takes a lot of muscle, that takes a lot of strength, and to do it for the length and time it takes you to go for 12 miles, these guys was wore out. And the people flew upon the spoil, and they took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat with the blood. Now, we know the Bible tells us that we're not supposed to eat the blood. The blood is the life. Now, in most butcher shops, you kill something, you hang it up, you drain the blood out, then you cook it or whatever after the blood's been drained out. But it says here they kill these things on the ground. And while they were on the ground, they still may have cooked them a little bit. They still may have warmed them up. But they never did actually bleed the animals out. They never did actually get all the blood out of them because they were so hungry. They were so ready to eat. Even if they did cook them, they didn't wait till they were done. Let's just get it a little bit warm. Let's get it warm enough we can tolerate it and let's eat. I'm hungry. It says, and the people flew upon the spoil. And they took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat with them and with the blood. Now you would say in a little while we're talking about who did sin. That right there would have been a sin. Now, do we go back to Saul and say, should the sin be on Saul because he cursed them that they would not eat? Or should the sin be on the people for eating with the blood? We have two sins here that we're going to have to look at here by the end of this chapter. Two different things took place, and who was guilty? And of course, when we get to the end of this thing, Saul is definitely innocent. He never does anything wrong. He's always the right guy. Surely he wasn't the one at fault. And then it says here, they ate with the blood. Then they told Saul. There's that tattletale guy again. He's got to go back and say, Saul? Now you would think Saul would be right there in the mix of this thing, right? Somebody had to go back and tell Saul, so Saul, the people are out there killing oxes and sheep and everything else, and they're eating it with the blood. And of course, Saul's all holy rollery kind of guy. He's all sanctimonious. He's all, I'm right with God. And so Saul says, behold, the people sin against the Lord in that they eat with the blood. And they said, ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone upon me this day. In other words, roll a big rock up here. He wasn't talking about covering himself. He wasn't talking about rolling it over me because people are messing up. But he says, bring me a big rock up here. Let's start us an altar right here. And let's bring those cows and those cows and the sheep and those things. Let's bring those things up here and let's look at it. It says, bring a roll of stone. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people and say, in other words, send out some messengers all around the people and say unto them, bring me hither every man his ox and every man his sheep and slay them and eat and sin not against the Lord. In other words, bring them up to this altar, not a worship service, but an altar that we would cook it and dress it and clean it rightly where the blood's not with it, that we'll pour the blood out over here, we'll dress it on the rock where everything gets drained out, and we'll have it right that we may eat together and do it rightly. He says that the eating that says here, built and there he is, and slay them and eat, and sin not against the Lord and eat with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night, and they slew in them, and they did eat. Now we know this took place at night, so we know this was not a worship service which was done, but it could have been a cooking service, it could have been an eating service. So he brought this, and it says, and Saul built an altar unto the Lord, the same as the first altar that he built unto the Lord. So right here tonight, he builds an altar, not necessarily for worship though, but for the people to slay their food on, to slay their meat on, to drain the blood out, to cook it thoroughly, that they be not sinning against God in the way that they ate and did their work. But this was the first altar that Saul made. And then Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines tonight. Now wait a minute. He cursed the people, wouldn't let them eat. They're barely going to get a little groceries in them right now. He's fixing to let them eat a little bit, cook a little bit. But before they can even go to sleep and rest that night, he's wanting to already load up and get ready to go fight some more. We just stopped long enough to eat so we can go kill some more of them. He says, and Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until the morning light, and let us not leave any man of them. And they said, do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. Then said the priest, all of a sudden get back into the picture here, the priest that he said, I don't need you a while ago. Then said the priest, let us draw near thither unto God. Wait a minute. Before we go out and whip these people all night, before we go, let's have a little worship service here. Let's inquire of God here. Let's find out what God has to say here. I mean, we done chased them all day long. We've been whipping them pretty good. We're tired. We're hungry. We just got a little food, but we still need some rest. Let's take a little break to worship God and get refreshed. Priest's a pretty wise guy here. He says, and Saul asked counsel of God. So he does worship here at this altar. He asked counsel of God. Shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? Ooh-wee. But he answered him not that day. So I'm all gung-ho about going and getting these people tonight. I'm all gung-ho about ripping and rearing and fighting them and running them and spoiling them until the next morning. I'm all ready to go. But God don't say a single word. He doesn't say, well, you go get them, boy. Or hold back. He doesn't even say hold back. He says, let me see what old Saul's going to do here. I'm not even going to talk to him. No answer whatsoever. Remember, Saul has done pushed God all the way to the left side here. He'd rather fight it himself, do it himself, and he just calls on God when the people just sort of force him to a little bit. And he says, but he answered him not that day. He answered him not that day. Saul said, draw near ye hither, all the chief people, and know and see if there is any sin between us this day. You remember Joshua? And when they, at Ai, and they killed 36, 37 people there. And Joshua said, oh man, we've been smitten before the people. And he went and he cried and he poured stuff on his head. And God said, get up. There's sin in the camp. So the first thing Saul's going to sit here and says, well, if God won't answer us, if God won't talk to me, if God won't give me direction, undoubtedly that's because there's sin in the camp. Undoubtedly that's one of you guys who's done wrong. Whether it's the eating with the blood or this, that, and the other. But one of you guys has sinned. God won't even talk to me. He won't even lead me. He won't even guide me. He says, draw near hither, all the chief people, and know and see whether there be sin hath been this day. Well, we already know there's been a bunch of sin. They've made an oath. And they ate with the blood. There's been a lot of sin going on this day. And he's going to sit there and say, let's see if there's sin. And who did it? And what happened? For as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan, boy, he's quick to burn his son, ain't he? Though it be in Jonathan, my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people which answered him. In other words, I already know somebody's done tattletaled on Jonathan. Somebody's done told me he done ate some of that honey. He's already broke my rule. He's already broke the regulation. He's already sinned against me, and now he's probably sinned against God and violating that oath. And then the people went and fell on the spoils. Even if it be in Jonathan, my son, he shall surely die. Saul is pretty quick to get rid of a son, huh? Man, no forgiveness there. We just legal right down to the rule and the letter. There ain't no forgiveness in Saul at all. Then said he unto all Israel, be ye on the one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. And the people said unto Saul, do what seemeth good unto thee. In other words, we'll all line up over here, and you and Jonathan over here. We're going to draw a lot. We're going to let the chips fall where they fall, and we're going to see who's guilty and who's not. And therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, give a perfect lot. Time out there. You don't reckon that God would have done a perfect lot anyways? God who is righteous, God who is holy, God who does not lie, cheat, steal, or any of those things. You don't suppose that if God's going to do a lot, it's going to fall on the exact right person automatically? And so Saul, in his holier-than-thou attitude, thinking that I hadn't got nothing to worry about, I hadn't sinned, I haven't done wrong, this can't be about me. He says, God, do a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken. But the people escaped. So when the lots fail, all the people. Well, it wasn't because they ate with the blood. That wasn't it. Then there's only Saul and Jonathan. And they were taken. Uh-oh, we narrowed this down pretty quick here. And the people escaped. And Saul said, cast lots between me and Jonathan my son. And Jonathan was taken. We know what Jonathan did. But he did it ignorantly. He didn't know about the oath. He didn't know what was going on. All he knows is after he'd done eating, wouldn't that be a fine time to find out you've sinned is after you've done it? Somebody said, oh, by the way, that's a sin. Oh, by the way, what you just done, even though you did it ignorantly, was in violation of what your father commanded us to do. Wow. He says, and Jonathan was taken. Then Saul said unto Jonathan, tell me what thou hast done. You don't reckon he ain't heard already what he had done? Tell me what thou hast done. Instead of Saul said, wait a minute, folks. I know that the curse that I put on y'all wasn't right. I know I shouldn't have put y'all under that kind of bondage. I know I shouldn't have hindered you like that. I made a mistake. I'm your king. Forgive me. Instead, he's going to steal. If it all has to happen, he's going to kill his own son for his own integrity. He's going to kill his own son because I'm the king. And he's just a son. He says, and the people said to Saul, wait a minute, let me go back. And Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him, and he said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of my rod that was in my hand, and I must die. He didn't say, but Daddy, I didn't know about the oath. I didn't know what I was doing wrong. He says, I did eat, and I must die. In other words, I am in servitude unto you. You're the king. If that's the rule, if that's what you laid down and said, whoever does this must die, then I will obey you even unto death. Israel has won a great victory today, and what better way to die than to know Israel was on top when I died? Dad, if you want me dead, if that's what your charge is, while we're on top, while we're the winners, I'll obey you even down to dying. Go ahead. If I must die, I must die. And Saul answered, God do so, and more also, For thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. In other words, if I don't kill you because of this, then I got to die. So if I don't fulfill what I've said, then that's on me. So he says, God do more to me if I don't do this to you. So Jonathan, get ready, because I am going to have you killed. I am going to take your head, or ever how he wanted to do it that day. He said, Jonathan, it's been nice knowing you, but you're out of here. What a dad, right? How would you like to? And he goes on serving this man for a few more years. What? And he follows him even unto death at the end. Him and Jonathan and his other two brothers die at the same place together. Jonathan loved his dad enough to do whatever his dad said, do. There's a lot in all that. And the people said unto Saul, shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought so great, or wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, for the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall on the ground, for he hath wrought with God today, this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not. Now the people actually risked their own lives there, because the king could have said, you with him, you die also. You want to stand up, take care of him? But I'm thinking in the back of his mind, he's saying, this is my way out. This is my way out. I can let him go and I can blame it on the people. He's good at blaming the people for everything. In fact, in the next chapter, we get to his enemies and he fights with the Amalekites. And who does he blame there? And we're going to find that out in the next chapter. But I just want to keep you stirred up a little bit. And then we see here, he says, Jonathan, that he die, and Saul went up. And then it says, let me go back to the verse. And the people said unto Saul, shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought so great a salvation in Israel? God forbid, for the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair, not even a hair, nothing's going to get touched on Jonathan. He has fought with God. He has been beside God. God has wrought with him. In other words, God was with him every time his sword fell. And he has done such a great victory. Shall he be put to death after doing all that and fighting with God and for God? Whew. And the people said, God forbid that a hair of his head, for he wrought with God this day, and the people rescued Jonathan. The people saved Jonathan because the people were unwilling to be part of the murder of Jonathan. Then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and after that he went into his own place. In other words, this time he went back to Saul of Gibeah. God never gave him an answer to go find the Philistines. God never gave him an answer to go finish off the Philistines. So he went back to Gibeah, and the Philistines were a thorn in his side up until the day he died. And Saul took the kingdom of over in Israel and fought against all of his enemies on every side, against Moab, against the children of Ammon, and against Edom, and against the kings of Zobah, and the Philistines, and wheresoever he turned, he vexed them. In other words, Saul, every time he turned around, was fighting with somebody. Always fighting. Saul was always at war. He never had a peaceful time in his whole kingdom. And he said, and he vexed them, and he went against them. And we notice he went against Moab, against Ammon, and against Edom, and against Zobah, and the Philistines. And everywhere he went, he fought against them, and he vexed them. And he gathered an host. In other words, this time he didn't disband his army down to just 3,000 folks. He kept a big army this time. And he gathered him a host. And he smote the Amalekites. Now you say, wait a minute. He hadn't done that yet. That's the good thing about the Bible. It don't always go in order. It says he smote the Amalekites, and this is the historian talking, but he don't smite the Amalekites until the next chapter. So we're going to get into that real heavy. But it says that he smote the Amalekites, and he delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them. In other words, eventually he was so sovereign, or his kingdom was so big, and he had enough soldiers that people quit trying to take over. They just had little skirmishes here and there and all around about. And then it says, and the sons of Saul were Jonathan, and Ishu, and Melchishahu. And the name of his two daughters were these. The name of the firstborn was Merib, and the name of the younger was Michal. And we know David married her. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam. Oh, yeah, I got that messed up. The daughter of Ahimaaz. And the name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. Ner being the uncle, Abner being his cousin. And Kish was his father of Saul, and Ner, the father of Abner, was the son of Abiel. In other words, Kish and Ner were brothers. And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto his own army. So we see here, we at the end here, we describe his family. We know there's another son, it doesn't mention it in this chapter, probably from another wife or a concubine, who never came out to fight in the wars. And we'll get to him at another time. But right now we see he had three sons, and when Saul dies, all three of those sons die with him in battle, right there beside him, or around about him. And it says here that this wife, Ahinoam, is probably the mother of all five of those children, the three sons and the two daughters, probably the same mother over all five of them. So he was pretty well stayed with one wife on the most part, except for maybe a concubine here and there. Because we know he has concubines, because later on we'll read about them. So that's how that battle went. And God got the victory. Jonathan got saved. Saul got put on the spot for cursing the people for eating. It was just a long day. Brother Lucian, would you pray for us, please?